You are listening to the all-new Health Talk with Dr. Diane MD on Atlanta's Incredible Radio every Thursday, 7 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for information to transform your health and your life.
So welcome again to Health Talk with Dr. Diane. I'm so excited today. My guest today is Pastor Terry. And Pastor Terry has this amazing story. When I heard the story, I knew I had to get her on the show because it's so inspirational that I know there are many listeners out there. There's someone out there who is waiting for this message. And so I really wanted to bring you on. I mean, this is such an amazing story. So Pastor Terry, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
All right. Now, you are the author of the book, Crawling Out of Darkness. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, when folks hear the story, they'll understand that mm-hmm. this title is very applicable. So first of all, who's Pastor Terry? Tell me a little about your background. Where are you from?
Yeah, okay. Thank you, Diana, for having me here. This is, Pastor Terry is from Kenya. Yes, that is Africa, East Africa to be precise. Friend, loving person, born again. I love how God deals with me. Not in every season, but then I've come to appreciate every season, understanding that every season just has its way of how I'm packing. But I love swimming.
Okay. All right. Now yes, you mentioned you were born again. So yes. This was from a young age, or was it an older as you were older? When did you become born again?
Actually, from a young age.
Okay.
I just kept serving the Lord. You would always find me in church. So I'm a churchy person.
You're a churchy person. Okay.
Yes. Yes.
All right. Now, as a young kid, what was life like? Life was normal, or were there challenges?
Oh, no. Life was very normal. Grew up in a very home-loving, environment. My parents, Christians from a very young age. And so I grew up in a very stable home, so to speak. Normal challenges, normal sibling fights, really nothing quite out of the ordinary. But I was a sickling as well. But nothing was really out there that was not, like any other.
Okay. All right. So
pretty normal.
Happy childhood. Yeah. Now, the events of this book took place in what year?
2004.
Okay. Yeah. So in 2004, mm-hmm. you were about to get married.
Yes.
And tell us what happened that mm-hmm. changed your life.
Okay. So I'm excited early in the morning. It's my wedding day. And, as a girl, you're waiting for this day for a very long time. So finally it is here. I'm pretty excited. I just completed my Bible and theology. I've gone to school. So early in the morning, I realized that I had part of the clothes of my fiancé. And I needed to, he needed to get them. So I called him on the phone and we talk and he says, oh, no problem. You'll get to church and you will have this clothes. But one of my friends had spent the night. So I give her this clothes because, she's going to get there before me. Problem is she was not very conversant with where we were staying. So she needed to get to the bus stop because she was not driving. So I decided to escort her. This was about 4:45 in the morning. So I escort her to the bus stop. And she gets in the bus, and as I'm coming on my way back home, there's a car parked in front of me. There is a guy sitting on the bonnet. I'm not thinking much about it. I'm just humming my happy tunes, and boom, this is the guy just grabs me, and stashes something in my mouth, throws me in the back seat.
And how far is this from home? Because I know you walked your friend to the bus stop, but
yes.
How far from home?
This is about 10 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not far. It's not far at all.
And as far as you know, is the area generally safe?
Very.
Okay.
Very safe.
So this is really unusual then.
Very. And it's just so unusual. I'm not prepared. I mean, of course, nobody's ever prepared for such kind of a thing, but I'm just left wondering what's going on. But quickly, I am thrown in the back of the seat. And blows, you know, has been hit left, right, and center. I got to realize there were four people in the car. That was my, you know, that was the driver, the co-driver, myself, and the guy who was with me at the back seat. And the co-driver is kneeling on his seat. He's just punching me. He's just punching me continuously with this guy at the back. And the driver is driving so fast.
And I'm, you know, again, if someone has never been through anything like this, I'm just wondering, you're thrown in the back of the car. You realize there are three other people in the car. What's going through your mind at this point?
I can't even explain. There was just, you see, I was yanked from the happy emotion. So my mind is still stuck at that. There's a mind that is telling me this is a surprise. But then when the blow started landing on my face and everywhere, I realized, wait, this is not a surprise. And then my question is, what do you want? Going on. So before long, that's when one of them just said, you know, you have to cooperate or you'll die. And I'm asking, what? So I pushed the thing from my mouth and I see it's pieces of cloth.
So they had
wedding day.
I'm just confirming. So they had put like cloth in your mouth to kind of stop you from making noise, right? Okay.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. So I managed to say, it's my wedding day. And one of them just laughed really loud and said, "Those are our wedding day," and put the cloth back in my mouth. I'm just in shock because I still haven't comprehended what is going on. When he is done, the co-driver comes and he as well does the same thing, you know, just goes in. And when he is done, the car stops for a bit.
Okay. So I'm only going to recap because there was a point there where the connection, probably the internet connection, made it so that the speech was distorted. So I wanted to make sure that our listeners heard what you said. So basically, when you were in the back with one guy and he raped you. Yes. And then the co-driver, the passenger, the front seat passenger came back. So the car was still driving and he also took turn to do the same, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So
then now the driver. So now the driver came behind, and I think that's the only time where the car stopped. So the driver now came behind, and now he decided to be different. He removed the cloth from my mouth and opened up his manhood and, you know, opened up his zipper and put his manhood in my mouth. And I tell you, I was just feeling, I'm gone. You know, I just felt, I can't do this. And one time, I remember I'd watched Oprah one time show, and she talked about how you can, you know, protect yourself, how you can be safe and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that just crossed my mind at that time. I said, you know, I'm going to bite this man because I know I'm going to die given the blood that was there and the smell that I had. And I just knew, because I'm going to die, I will bite this man so that he doesn't do this to any other woman. So I take a bite and, he just gave birth to a scream. He really screamed so loud. And from, I do not know, from the three, somebody stabbed me in my stomach.
Gosh. Oh, my goodness.
The door was opened and I was thrown out.
Wow.
I was thrown out. I remember I hit the tarmac, rolled a bit, and I passed out.
You know what's amazing, and again, for any of our listeners and viewers who are just joining us, you're listening to Health Talk with Dr. Diane, MD, and my guest today is Pastor Terry Gobanga, and she is the author of the book Crawling Out of Darkness, and we're talking about her experience back in 2004, where on her wedding day, of all days, she was heading back home after taking a friend to the bus stop, heading back home early in the morning, and was attacked where someone pulled her in the back of a car. And as she mentioned, she was raped by two of the people in the car. and the third one attempted, and you were able to. Now, here's the beauty of this. I'm thinking, here you are in the middle of this, and you're thinking about preventing this guy from doing this to someone else. I mean, that's amazing. That's amazing.
I don't know.
Yeah. And so they, so you were stabbed, you said.
Yes.
Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. Yes. So stabbed and thrown out.
Thrown out of this moving vehicle. And so this is just, you know, hearsay. Later on, I get to know that a small child saw me being thrown out of the car. Mm-hmm. And she's the one who actually went on to call the grandmother. She was staying with the grandmother, and the grandmother came and started screaming. And so people came out of their houses, and they were able to see this girl. So remember, I was abducted at about 5:45 in the morning, and I was found at 12:30 in the afternoon.
Oh, wow. So this was a several hours of this terrible ordeal. Exactly. How far from home were you dropped off?
Well, those are miles.
Miles and miles away. Okay.
Miles away, yes. Yeah, so when the police came and the villagers, they just could not get a pulse. So everybody believed that I was dead. And they wrapped me in the dead man's blanket. You know, in Kenya, we have something before the body bag. We have, you know, you get wrapped in sort of a blanket, and then they put you in the back of the car as they're taking you to the mortuary. But here is Terry. I cough because I'm alive. And she's alive, you know. So they change. Now they're going to the national hospital, which is
so instead of the mortuary, they're taking you now to the hospital. Exactly. I'm curious. Did at any point? Mm-hmm. While all of this was going on, after you were dropped off and they were trying to figure out what to do with you, where to take you, were you aware of any of this? Was it something like you were aware but you couldn't respond, or were you not aware of what was going on?
I wasn't aware. What I remember, though, I know I just heard people screaming, and I do not know at what point.
Okay.
So, yeah, I can't really tell at what point that happened.
Okay. Yes. So now you are, instead of going to the mortuary, thank goodness, because you're not dead, they thought, you're being taken. You know, we're chuckling about it right now, but my God, this is really, can you imagine? So now we're going to the hospital. Mm-hmm. And so now you're at the hospital, and what's going on?
So now I'm at the hospital, and they look at me, and I hear, I was a mess. I was just screaming, and especially whenever I would hear a male voice, you know, a man's voice.
Of course, the trauma.
I would be screaming everywhere.
Yeah.
And the hospital managed to trace the church where I was supposed to get married to, which is purely a miracle. And they get to this church. This is All Saints Cathedral back in Kenya. Mm-hmm. They get to this church and they get the reverend there, and he, you know, they ask, are you missing a bride? Remember, people in church, they've had to pull down my decor to give room for the second wedding, which was coming in, because now the bride is missing. Nobody knows where the bride is.
I wonder, what were they thinking? Because, I mean, I'm thinking about that now. Mm-hmm. If you're at a church waiting for the bride to show up and the bride doesn't show up, I mean, what were they thinking?
People thought, cold feet, you know, maybe I changed my mind. Those who did not know that my fiancé was inside waiting for me thought maybe we eloped, you know. I mean, there were all sorts of accusations, allegations. People just did not understand what was happening. Back at home, everybody was just so scared. Celebrations had died down. People were sent out. Could you go look for her? My friend Judy was in a lot of trouble. Where is she? You were the one who left with her. Where did you take her? Everybody was just at her. I felt really sad for her later on, of course, because at that time I did not know much. But yeah, so when he gets to church and you know, they say, could you come? And the reverend goes to the hospital and is able to say, hey, this is Terry. Goes back to church, picks my fiance. They call back home. So everybody meets at the hospital. And problem is, the member of, you know, our fourth estate was also present. I do not know how that leaked to them, but the media was also there to take my story. I will tell you, Dr. Dan, I felt so bad. You know, when you're so down, the last thing you want is for people to publicize what has happened to you. And I felt really, really broken at that time, you know, for my story to be out there, because at night I was part of the news, the bride who was raped. In the morning, I was in the newspaper, the bride was raped, and I felt, God, where are you?
I'm curious about this, because in some cultures, when rape occurs, they even will look at the woman, the victim, and will blame them. Did you experience that, or was it entirely a supportive thing for you?
No, I really experienced it. The question was, hello?
Yes, I'm here. So the question was, in some cultures with rape, they do blame the victim, the woman. So during time, did you experience any kind of blaming, or was people just simply supportive of you?
No, I did receive quite a bit of support from my family. But the question was, why did you go? Where, as a bride, how would you leave the house in the morning? And yes, it is not one of the, it doesn't happen. I actually had to escort Judy because, you know, my best mate said, you see, I can't take her to the bar store. My work is to ensure that you have a proper breakfast, you know, so I'm not leaving. So really, it was one of those things that just doesn't really happen to brides. You don't leave the house in the morning. And that was something that haunted me for a long time. People kept throwing that on my face. That why, you know, how do you leave the house in the morning? You're the bride, you know, like you brought this to yourself. Definitely I was on the receiving end as well. Like, how could you? Why did you? So those are some of the things that I had to fight with.
And you mentioned that you were inundated, you know, in the morning, they would talk about it, and at night they would talk about it. So this was a lot. What were you when you were by yourself, and especially someone who's a person of faith? What were you going through? I mean, were you questioning God? Were you saying, why me? How were you handling this?
Oh my God. I oscillated between, I was a mixed, I was a cocktail of emotions, you know. Mm-hmm. One minute I would be able to really, you know, thank God and say, I really thank God for life. I didn't die through it all. I really thank God that, you know, I'm alive. Well, there were bad news that was there, you know. For example, where I was stabbed, the doctor said it went deep and it ruptured my womb. My womb was ruptured in the process. So I was told I will not be able to carry children. And so some of the things, as I'm saying, you know, a cocktail of emotions. So one minute I'm saying, thank you, God, that I did not die. The next minute I'm asking God, really, like, why did this even have to happen? Okay, why did it even happen to happen on my wedding day? Well, there's no day that is better. But why did it have to happen on my wedding day? Then I get from there and I say, but God, now why am I alive and I will never be able to have children? So I was a mixture of everything, and a woman of faith, born again, you know, a pastor by then as well. But I really still did struggle. But what kept me was worship. What just kept me was worship. I just kept playing worship. And that kept lifting me up.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. So now you're in the hospital. You've recovered.
Yes.
How long did this recovery period take?
It's about 2 weeks, where they had to do the stitching, where they had to give me medication, you know, prevention from HIV and AIDS. They had to give me the pill so that I don't conceive. So they had to start counseling on me. So I was about 2 weeks. That's when I went home.
Okay.
And I was told that I needed to go back for counseling. And then 3 months, I would need to go in for HIV and AIDS test.
And you know, that's interesting. Sometimes people hear of rape and they don't consider all of that, right? So you have to deal with the trauma of the rape, then the trauma, the psychological trauma also. But people don't often realize that generally women end up taking the morning after pill because there is a risk that you could conceive. And then there is HIV. So you end up taking the antiretroviral to prevent. And then months later, you're still expected to, you know, it doesn't end. It doesn't end.
Right. And so it's more or less like a constant reminder that, hey, this is what happened to you. So
yeah.
You try to And of course, don't forget the police aspect of it, because they're also trying to get evidence.
Yes.
Who did this? You know, who? So I kept, they kept calling me to the police station. Could you try and do, put a lineup? And is it any one of this men? You know, and at one point I told them, listen, I can't do this anymore. The more I try to keep moving, and the minute I get that phone call to go to the police station, I'll go to the police station and I'm really, my heart is just pumping out on myself, because I'm thinking, am I going to see either of them today? Is it going to be today? So it would take a lot of emotions, and a lot of, it reminds me of that day. I have to replay that in my mind and, you know, look keenly at this man. Is it any of you? At one point I told them, I can't do this. I can't do this. So I stopped the legal bit of it. I said, you know what, God is going to take care of this.
So did they, so they never caught these guys?
They never did.
Oh boy.
Was I at the right place at the wrong time, or wrong place at the right time? I just.
Was there any thought that it could have been planned? Did that actually go through anyone's mind that perhaps this was planned?
Oh my God, it went through a lot of people's mind. They blamed everybody. They blamed especially Judy, my friend that I escorted.
Oh, okay.
Are you sure you did not plan this? Are you sure you're not jealous of her? Are you sure? Are you sure? So there was a lot of that.
Okay. How is Judy today?
She's fine.
Okay.
Oh, she's fine. I thank God for restoring our relationship, because at one point we drifted with everything that everybody was talking about. But I came out to defend her strongly.
Okay. All right. All right. So now you've been released from the hospital. One of the things you mentioned is that you did have some counseling, which I think is good. But tell me, your husband now, well, he was he was supposed to be your husband, and all of this happened. So how did he take it, and where did things go from there with your relationship?
He was amazing. Mm-hmm. He was super supportive. He wanted to marry me regardless. He actually came with my wedding gown on that very day.
Oh, wow.
He wanted to marry me. Yes, he was such a gentleman. And, you know, we just went on. Like, he kept, he was with me every counseling session, unless he was asked to step out. He was, you know, he was there all through. Mm-hmm. And he kept telling me, I want to marry you. You know, I want to marry you. And I kept telling him, just wait. Just wait, because I was in a state. My mind was not functioning very well. I needed to understand. I needed to get what was happening to me. I needed God. I felt there was a need for God to explain why he allowed this to happen to me. So I was not in a very good space. So I told him, just wait. So up until when we got to 6 months and it was really confirmed that I was negative, I was very ignorant about HIV and AIDS then. Once it was confirmed that I was negative, I was very excited, and I told him, now we can get married.
Okay.
Yeah, so we started organizing for what I call my second wedding.
Okay. And so you guys did actually get married?
We actually did get married. God gave us a free wedding, totally free wedding. You know, the media that took my story and put it out there, somebody read my story and got in touch and said, hey, I want to help. A lady called Veep said, I want to help. I want to give you a free wedding. And so I was given a free wedding.
That's wonderful. Yeah. Wonderful.
Yeah. So we did get married, went for honeymoon, came back. That was 29 days later. We came back and we were staying at a very, very cold place. And my husband thought, hey, I want to make sure that you're warm. I don't want my bride to be cold even one more time. So he went and bought a charcoal burner.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's what we had in our bedroom. It was making the room warm and nice. Mm-hmm. But when we went to the bedroom, he actually removed it outside, you know, so that we are okay in the night. But it was a very, very cold night still. In as much as the room was warm, I was still very cold. And I remember telling him this. So what happened after that was, I think I just passed out. You know, coming to, I would call him. At times he would respond. At times he would not respond. None of us knew what was going on at the time. We just could not understand why. We didn't have the strength to stand up, but we were talking. I remember telling him, oh my, we need to pray. And we were praying. Nothing was happening. Kept saying, we need, I told him, you need to say, we shall live and not die in Jesus' name. And he kept saying that. And I kept saying that. He couldn't say that. He kept saying, Jesus, Jesus. Then I passed out. The next time I woke up, I pushed myself out of the bed. I fell down. I threw up. Interesting enough, when I threw up, I got some strength to crawl. Mm-hmm. So I crawled, switched on the light, went to his side of the bed. He was sleeping, picked the phone, called my best mate, who was actually upstairs. We were staying in an apartment, so she was upstairs in the next floor. And she told me, I've heard you guys calling. I know the thieves have called the police. I said, no, they're not police. Something is very wrong. My husband is not even responding. The money to come downstairs, broke the door, crawled, opened the last latch on the door. They came in. The next time I woke up, I was in hospital.
Now, again.
Again.
If all that happened to you was what happened the first time, mm-hmm. it in itself would be enough for a lifetime, right? Many people yes. don't go through any mm-hmm. of that. One thing. Yeah. And then here yeah. you go. Mm-hmm. You're now on your way. Now things have turned a corner, right? Yeah. You've come out of the hospital. You know that you're not HIV positive. Yes. Things are looking good. The man that was supposed to marry you decided he mm-hmm. still wanted to marry you, which yeah. is wonderful. I mean, there are relationships that have broken up when something like this happened, right?
Absolutely.
But he's stuck by you. You guys got married, got a free mm-hmm. wedding. Right?
Yes.
So it's looking up. And now yes. this. So as you said, you're staying at a place. It was cold mm-hmm. and
very cold.
He got this coal burner, which I'm from mm-hmm. the Caribbean. So we're very familiar with this, right? So that was to warm up the place. And then, but you noticed that both of you were feeling dizzy yeah. and weak and tired.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did anything occur to you as to what may be going on?
Oh, no, not at all. We just, because if there was anything, then we shouldn't be talking to each other. But we were able to converse.
But you were just feeling weak and tired.
Absolutely. You know, and very cold. I just remember it was just too cold. And why we needed to stand was just to get another duvet to add on to what we have. And that's when we realized, wait, we can't stand. So something is wrong. So we were
so what's a duvet? What's a duvet?
Cover, you know, like
oh, a like blanket. A blanket. So you wanted another blanket, but you couldn't stand up to get it.
We couldn't stand to get it, and we were shouting, we were screaming because the watchman's house was, you know, the guard's house was pretty close to where we're staying. You know, the
guard of that
house. But he didn't come either. So
So this was what your friends heard you screaming,
yes,
and thought maybe there were thugs there.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
And they called the police.
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
Yeah, but then they didn't show up at the right time because I heard they came when we were already in hospital.
Okay.
So when I woke up, I asked, where's my husband? Then, you know, they said, oh, he's in the next room. We are, you know, we're working on him. I said, okay. So went back to sleep, you know, then woke up again at some point and I asked, so how is he doing? Where is he? He's like, he's in the next room. We're still working on him. But then I had a very disturbing conversation. Well, it was just a conversation the nurse was having on the phone, but she mentioned mortuary.
Mm.
And for me, something just jumped in my spirit. I thought, did she mention mortuary? So I started calling out frantically. And I said, I want to see the doctor. I want to see the doctor. You know, I don't want to talk to you. I want to see the doctor. So the doctor was brought in. And I remember him just, you know, moving the curtain around my bed. And I said, listen, where's my husband? And, you know, he's in the nursery. I said, listen, I've gone through enough. I want you to tell me the truth. And I just want one word from you. Don't tell me any other thing. Just one word, alive or dead. And I remember the doctor just looked at me and said, I'm sorry. He didn't make it.
Oh, wow. So this is a month after your wedding.
29 days.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
I could not believe it until doctor, I just laughed. I laughed really loud. And I asked him, listen, are you born again? And he said, yes. I said, good for you. Get up. We have to go pray for him because that's not how God does things.
Mm.
And I was pulling all these machines that were attached to me because I'm getting up. I have to pray for him. God doesn't do things like that. He should give you a break, you know. Mm-hmm. I thought.
Mm-hmm. And
as I'm trying to pull this in off, the doctor just slaps me,
mm-hmm.
you know. And later on, I get to understand I'm running in shock.
Because you were probably so hysterical, and that was his way.
Yeah. And you just needed to get me to
get you back.
Your body cannot shut down on me. You have to understand this. And slap. And let me tell you, oh my God, the news got home. It crushed me. Pain, I cannot explain pain to your fingernails. I was lost for words. I was at that place. I just needed to see him for me to believe. And they refused for me to see him. They said, no, he is gone. And you know, you put me, you know, pinning me back in bed, trying to give me this, you know, injecting me.
Sedate you a little bit. Listen, and I'm talking about people who are pretty religious. At this point, maybe saying, you know, I'm done with this religious thing because I'm serving God and look at all this test that I'm having.
Yeah.
At any point, did that cross your mind or did that pull you closer to your faith?
No. At that point, none of that happened. I did not draw away. I did not get closer to God. At that point, I was just confused.
Okay.
I just knew somebody will come and give me a different news. I just waited. I mean, I was told my brother is on his way. I was just waiting. Somebody needs to tell me something different. Something is wrong. Definitely, he is not dead. So when my brother came and my brother confirmed and said, you know, Terry, hey, this is what has happened. I was like, no, don't take him to the morgue because he's going to freeze up. So I don't want him to freeze up. We have to pray. You know, and my brother was shaking me and telling me, Terry, you have to accept this. And he's holding me. I said, no, you know, I discharged myself from hospital, actually. I just didn't see why nobody's allowing me to go pray for him because he's going to wake up. You know, I was in great denial.
Oh, boy.
So when we get home and people are crying and my in-laws, part of my in-laws come over crying. And the thing is, I've killed their son.
Ah. So that was the angle that people took.
Yes.
Oh no.
Like, oh my God, what? So from instead of being a mourning wife, I was the murderer, you know, the wife
who
did something to the husband. And I was so broken. I can't even begin to explain how broken I was because I'm here mourning and you're telling me that I did what? You know, so we moved past that and now we're organizing for this funeral. And now during that time, I am so confused. There's so many people coming in. And I remember the church service where a few days ago, I was in my white dress and he was waiting for me right in front at the altar. And now a few days later, it's still me, not in white, but in black. And he's not waiting me at the front, but we are wheeling him in the casket right before me, and that broke me. That really, really did break me. So we go home and we, you know, we do all the burial rites and everything, and we come back to this capital city, and I'm asking myself, now that is where I was able to confront my faith. Now at this point, because now I'm all by myself, no people are not coming in, and I really isolated myself. That's the point where I was asking myself and questioning my faith. In fact, I dare say that is the time I asked myself, God, are you really there? Or do I just worship, you know, in the air? And are you really there? Could you actually sit and watch me go through all this? Are you serious? And at that time, I was looking at the birds chirping. I remember this day at the balcony, sitting at the balcony, and I was asking God this question. And that's when now God was, well, you know, I felt the Spirit of God telling me, you need to go to church and sing. And I asked myself, wait, you can't come and tell me to go sing, and you've not even explained to me what was happening. And I get to realize that even as believers, that's where we go wrong. We refuse to move until you have an explanation of some sort why God allowed something to happen. But, you know, he owes you no explanation, and everything happens for a reason. So, yeah. So anyway, obedience is better than sacrifice. I actually went to church, sang, and immediately that happened, I realized that there was some form of healing because I was able to face, you know, everything that I thought I wouldn't be able to face. I was able to face people. And that was just the beginning of healing. Baby steps, but it was something.
That's wonderful. Something. And you do have a point, you know, I'm a big proponent of getting counseling and support when you're struggling mm-hmm. through things, but also taking action, because that sitting back and waiting, sometimes just getting yourself up to take action will certainly make things start falling together, you know, coming
in
together.
Fact, I normally say, don't dwell, deal.
I like it. Yeah, I like it. Yep. Just deal with the issue.
You have to deal with the issue.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Now, and again, for our listeners who are just joining us, I'm having this amazing conversation with Pastor Terry Gabanga. Her book is called Crawling Out of Darkness. And my goodness, you've been through so much, much more than many people, enough for many lifetimes, okay? So tell me that now after this, after having gone through rape, having gone through, and you were stabbed, right? Having gone through the death of your husband in a short time after getting married,
29 days.
Please tell me things turned around for you.
Yes. My business. I have said it out loud. I'm never going to get married, and never. And I laugh about this, and I tell people, hey, where you put a full stop, just go back and put a comma.
Your
life, the full stop where it is. If it's God's law, put a comma, allow the Lord to continue writing the rest of the chapters of your story, because it's not over until he says it's over. So I, you know, several people started coming my way. Well, first I was really shunned, and they called me cast. They called me all sorts of names. Mm. And as I said, when I went to church, you know, something just leaped in me. Life was back in me. Faith comes by hearing, and hearing the word of God. So whatever else you're hearing, whatever you expose yourself to hearing, that is what is going to build you or break you.
I'm curious. So during this time, by the way, you're a pastor. Mm-hmm. So were you preaching in church and all of that? Mm-hmm. People were coming and listening to you and all of that.
Yeah, preaching. And I remember even some pastors went to my senior pastor and told him, you have to do away with this one. You know, she cannot be in your team, given everything that she's going through. She's not going to bring a good name to your church. And that really broke me, because as believers, we're supposed to hold up each other.
Support each other. Yeah,
so that really broke me. So anyway, I went about, I mean, I, as I said, I kept encouraging myself, realizing you cannot dwell. I keep encouraging people, if you decide not to move on 10 years later, the day you decide to start, you will start from where you left. So it doesn't help.
Yes.
So, you know, I picked myself up, and now people started coming my way. You know, when you have positive energy, it attracts positive things.
Yeah, absolutely. That is true.
And so pick myself up and continue working. And so some men started being interested. Hey, how you doing? And things like that. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't there. So, but then there's one man who really just stood out, and he just kept calling me. And, you know, he would tell me, and we would be talking for about 3 hours. I'm talking about my late husband. That's all I used to do. I'm just, oh, I miss him. Oh, I'm crying all the time. But one time he did not call me. And I was very upset. And I remember my mother asking me, why are you upset? You know, why are you upset? You said, you know, you're not going to get married or anything like that. I said, no, I'm just upset. So finally he gets in touch. And long and short of it, he says, you know, his phone was faulty and stuff. Then now he asks for my hand in marriage. And I tell him, wait, you know about my story? Could you go by, there's a magazine that has written my story. Could you go by it and you know, say, read it and make sure that you want to marry me. So he does exactly that. He comes back and says, I want to marry you. I said, listen, I can't give you children. I know you African men. I won't be able to give you children, you know, given the stab. And he looks at me, he says, children are a gift from God. If we get them, amen. If we do not, that means I will have more time to love you.
Oh, that was amazing. I know. I don't think I've heard that one before. That's awesome.
I said, what now? What? Did you just say you'll have more time to love me? I said, okay, whatever. So anyway, I tell him, okay, I'm going to get married to you. So he goes home. He travels home to tell the parents about this amazing woman he's met, and you know, everybody's excited. Tell us more about her. She's born again. Oh yes, tell us more about her. She's a pastor. Oh, even better. So tell us more about her. She was really like, what do you mean? she was, yes, on her wedding day. Wedding day? She's married. She was married. The husband died. Whoa. What? Like, what do you even mean? So the mother was just quiet. The father was not amused one bit. Not in the slightest. It's like, okay, listen. Is it not obvious something is wrong here? Is it, can't you see it? You know, you won't even survive in this one. Can't you see? She's definitely cursed. Something is very wrong. I won't even come for the wedding if you push on with this. And he told them, listen, I only came in a very respectful way. I only came to inform you. I didn't come to consult.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right.
So he came back and he told me about it. And oh my God, are you sure you want to marry me? I said, yes, I want to marry you. You know, I have my heaven. Heaven is backing me. I want to marry you. So we started organizing for what I call my third wedding. Yes. Oh, so nobody gave us a free wedding this time, but people just came, really, really supported us. And we had our wedding. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful day. 1 year later, I get sick. I go to hospital and they tell me, you've conceived.
Wow.
I was elated. On top of the moon. I couldn't believe it. I went to
this is totally unexpected, right? You were told this wouldn't happen.
Absolutely. So I go to two other gynecs and they confirmed that, hey, you are pregnant.
Wow.
I just took my phone and you know what? I text everybody on my contact list. I just said, I'm pregnant. I'm pregnant. So people, who are you? I'm pregnant.
Like, you don't worry about who I am. I'm pregnant.
So it was a very tough pregnancy, I must say. But I remember 48 hours later, I was in church that Sunday.
Wow.
Yeah.
And it didn't end there. You ended up having a second child.
Absolutely. So now there are two. So our first one is called Tehil. Our second one is called Toda. Both of
beautiful. Beautiful. Wow. Now, what an amazing story. I mean, really. I mean, I know of people who have gone through a tenth of what you've gone through. And they curl up and fold away and wither away. And you've gone through all of this. And somehow you flourish and you continue to do well. And not only that, but you are out there sharing this message, shared it in your book, Crawling Out of Darkness, sharing it with others to help empower them. So I'm curious, for someone who's out there going through their darkness, whatever it is, even if it may not be anywhere as big as yours was, the challenges you've had, as we wrap up this interview, what would you share with someone who's listening in, who's going through something and can't seem to find their way out? What would you tell them right now?
I know that people are at different seasons in their lives, but I would just want to encourage somebody out there that that's why they're called seasons, because there is absolutely no one season that comes to stay. Comes and goes. But then the attitude also matters. You know, so whenever life hits you hard, I keep reminding people, and I want to remind our viewers that, listen, you do not practice for it. It's only acrobats who practice, you know, they practice for their art, you know, but you did not practice for it. And so, yes, you're allowed to be hit down and hit down really hard. But what is of importance is for you to pick yourself up from that position. You cannot stay down there because you were not born to be down there. You were born to flourish. Arise and shine. It's not just arise. After you arise, you need to shine. So you're not born to be down there. Pick yourself up. And because you did not exercise for it, you don't practice for it, you're not some form of magician, you did not practice for it as a robot. So when you're down there, get up. You won't get up on your feet. Get up on your knees. Start crawling. Do anything, but make some movement towards your destiny. Crawl out of it, then finally pick yourself up and stand up. Stand up, you will not have such a straight posture, but keep going. What I'm trying to say is there is another chapter. And if it's not so good, keep turning the pages of your life. There will definitely be a chapter that you will get to and you will say, I'm glad I held on to that process, because process is so key. It's so key. It will finally add up. It will finally start to make sense. It will finally, you know, today I look at my life and I say, listen, God, you're bringing me to this place. I'm still pastoring. The church is called Stones to Rubies Ministries, together with my husband. We are the visionaries there. And I'm working with, you know, rape survivors. In fact, I do not call them. They come in as victims. They go to becoming survivors. You know, you survived it all, but it's not enough for you to be a survivor. I'm encouraging people that are listening to us. It's not enough for you to be a survivor. You need to step out and be a warrior. You need to go back and minister to those who have gone through what you've gone through, because there's a reason why you survived it and you are where you are. So today I run an organization. I call it Kara Olmurani. That's a very interesting language. It's called Ma in our community, in our country. But it basically means I am a warrior. Just get out there and pick up somebody else who is going through what they've gone through, that you've gone through. You are able to help them because they are able to understand your language. You have been there. You know what they've been through. And it will help. So go out and do something. Don't just call up. Crawl out. Instead of calling up, crawl out.
Wonderful. There you have it. And as you said, you know, one of the best ways to help yourself is actually to help someone else. You'd be surprised what it does. Yep. Exactly. That's such an inspirational woman, such an inspirational story, because again, another person would have handled this very differently. So I really thank you for not only, as you said, surviving, but thriving and then sharing and helping to empower other women. So again, thanks, Pastor Terry. And the book is called Crawling Out of Darkness. And tell us, in terms of contact, is there a website that people could contact you if they want to hear more about you, talk to you? What's your website?
Yes, my website is www.terrygobanga.com. Yes, that is terrygobanga.com.
Okay. Yes. And we'll make sure that information is also on my social media site, including my Facebook page, which is facebook.com/Dr. Diane A. Thompson. Also, you do have some upcoming events. Let's talk about that a little bit in case people want to come check you out.
All right. From the 1st to the 3rd of December, I will be in Alabama. We're having a HER conference. We're calling it HER conference, and HER, H-E-R, healing, empowerment, and restoration. That is what we are trusting God in the meeting. So that will be from the 1st to the 3rd. 1st and 3rd, it's open to everybody, you know, on the 1st from 6 p.m., 3rd from 1 p.m. But then on the 2nd, it's just purely for the ladies. We begin from 10 a.m. all the way to 6 p.m. So 6 p.m., we're going to have a banquet, and it's free for all the ladies. So just come out all. It's going to be beautiful. We will have this at Berean Outreach Ministry. And we are just trusting God for an overflow, because we want to minister to the women, that they're able to be empowered, they're able to be healed. Because I realize that the greatest thing that you can have as a person is healing from the inside, because then it pours on the outside. So it's called HER Conference, featuring Deborah Yet Queens. And the address is 105 Courtway, Pelham, Alabama. 35124. So that's 105 Courtway, Pelham, Alabama, 35124. So we're inviting all the women to come, especially on the 2nd, but from 1st and 3rd, the men as well are invited.
Wonderful, wonderful. And again, I'll make sure this information is shared with our listeners. And I really thank you for coming on and sharing your story, your testimony. As they say, you turned this test into a testimony. And you're out there empowering others. And I really appreciate that. So thank you so much for sharing your story.
Thank you for having me.
Any parting words?
Crawl if you cannot do anything else, but make some destiny towards where God is calling you. Make a move towards destiny. I encourage somebody. Don't fight to run. Don't fight to walk. Just crawl. Make that step and you will see something great happening. It's not by might. It's not by power, but by the Holy Spirit.
All right. Thank you so much, Pastor Terry. And to our listeners, thank you so much for listening.
If you've missed any portion of this broadcast or would like to find out more about Dr. Diane A. Thompson, please join us on www.drdianethompson.com. That's www.drdianethompson.com. Remember, your health is your wealth. Have a great evening.